turn to our favorite book, a new favorite book, right? Second Kings, is that right, Jackson? Is it Second Kings? Second Corinthians, chapter 6. I was just trying to play off of that. Second Corinthians, chapter 6. Great chapter. We will get there here in just a minute. Good to see everybody here. I know a lot of folks said they were going to wear their costumes this morning, and I only see a couple of you wearing your costumes, so... There you go. There's a young lady. She's visiting a computer dating service, and she has decided that she's going to go the computer route. And she's talking with the technician, and he says, "What kind of person are you looking to date?" She goes, "I'm not just looking for somebody to date. I'm looking for somebody to marry. I want that special, awesome, incredibly good guy." And so he says, "Well, I got to input some stuff in the computer. What are you looking for?" And she says, "This well." Needs to be good looking on the outside, but also on the inside, polite and humorous, sporty, knowledgeable, good at singing and dancing, willing to accompany me the whole day while I'm at home, be able to tell me interesting stories when I need a companion for conversation, yeah, and be silent when I want to rest. So he puts it all in there. And the computer spits out, buy a TV.
He was in choir throughout high school.
Hey, somebody's, God is speaking. How do we pick companions? I mean, you start thinking about all the things that we look for in friendships and in dating relationships. And I know we've got a few younger folks in here. And I promise you that if your kids are in class next Sunday, they're going to hear a lot of these same things. But when we talk about potential mates, or maybe we talk about friendships, or even potential business partners, or those that we're going to be with on a continual basis, how do we choose who we're going to be around? It's an important part of our lives. I remember growing up, my parents constantly would say, "Hey, you better choose your friends wisely. You pick your friends wisely. Pick your mate wisely. Pick the ones you're going to spend with great thought." So the scripture this morning is from 2 Corinthians 6. It's already been read. I'll read the rest of it in a minute, even though Jackson's read it once. In the Revised Standard Version, the way I memorized it was, "Do not be mismatched." Right? Or mismated is actually the word. Do not be mismated with unbelievers. New International Version says, "Don't be yoked together." And I love that. Because on your sheet that I passed out, there's a picture there that will make sense in just a moment. But J.B. Phillips says, "Don't link up with unbelievers and try to work with them." The Living Bible says, "Don't be teamed with those who do not love the Lord." And the Message says, "Don't become partners with those who reject God." The Greek word literally means to be unequally yoked. All right, so it's just not a matter of being yoked together. It's being unequally yoked, and that's not a good thing. If you turn to Deuteronomy chapter 22, verse 10, we kind of have an idea. I think Paul, when he's teaching this and he's talking about this, he's got this picture in his mind, right? Because it says, "Do not plow with an ox and a donkey." Can't help but think of donkey, you know, yoked together. Those of you that know that movie, right? Now, what's interesting is when you go back and you read the King James Version or some of the older versions, you don't see the word donkey, right? You see the word that we don't use anymore because it's not a very nice word in our culture and our time. But it's interesting to me that it says don't plow with an ox and a yoke together, right? And so you kind of take a minute and you think, okay, well, why is that? Why don't I want to plow with an ox and a donkey, right? And if I can say this in the nicest way possible, it'd be kind of like me and JR pulling on the same thing, right? He's bigger and he's stronger than I am. He would have a tendency to, a lot more of it would be going his direction than it would be going in my direction. But when you think about the ox and the donkey yoked together, plowing together, the picture you have there shows that yoke on an equal basis, but it'd be tilted and it wouldn't work good. But I don't think that's the true context of what's being said in Deuteronomy. Because if you'll go back to the Jewish law, an ox was a clean animal, and a donkey was an unclean animal. And so in that whole context right there, you have this instruction about what's clean and what's unclean, and what's important to be together and not to be together. And it's almost as if he's saying here, what the same thing that Paul is saying in 2 Corinthians. He says, hey, you know what? You don't want to live life together with an unclean person. Someone that doesn't have the same goals and the dreams that you have. When two animals are yoked together, when one turns left, the other needs to turn left. When one turns right, the other needs to turn right. They need to work together. And so it's critical for us, I mean, we're not animals, to walk as people in the same direction. If my friendships are going right and I'm going left, or if I'm going left and they're going right, that creates a lot of difficulties in our life. Right? When our goals and our dreams and our aspirations are separate and apart from those that those are represented by the world. So how can I tell when somebody isn't going in the same direction? Right? How can I tell what maybe some signs? So a couple of things this morning. Your conversation always turns from spiritual things to other things. Right? In my conversations with most of the people that I spend time with, the conversations turn to spiritual things. And we talk about godliness, and we talk about how Open Door is doing, and how ministry is going, and how's your life with God, and how's your relationship going, and those kinds of conversations, not the other way around. When my conversations turn from spiritual things, or if they're ashamed to talk about spiritual things in front of you, that tells me they're probably not going in the direction that you want them to be going in. How about the person you're with isn't clear on their standards or their convictions? They're just wishy-washy. They don't have a standard. They don't really have a conviction. And so when you talk about certain issues, they just kind of do their own thing, and you're like, whoa. Time out. How can you not think that's right or wrong? Do you not believe in God and what God teaches and those kinds of things? How about the person you're with picks friends who aren't believers and don't serve God, and their entire life is filled with folks outside of spirituality? That's a big thing to be paying attention to. And then the potential business partner that you might be linking up with isn't concerned with honesty and integrity and character. And I would say, as I think Paul says, run. Okay? Because we need to have those things in common. So when he's talking about not being mismated, or not being matched up well, or don't be yoked with an unbeliever, it's a pretty serious statement. I mean, it's not just a suggestion. It's a command from Paul through God, and I think it's really important. So notice the words that we're about to read. You're going to hear words like yoked and agreement and fellowship and common and harmony. And I want to look at a couple of those words this morning. 2 Corinthians 6, 14 through 16. Like I say, we just read it, but we're going to read it again. Don't be yoked together with unbelievers. For what do righteousness and wickedness have in common? Or what fellowship can light have with darkness? What harmony is there between Christ and Belial? And Belial is just another name for Satan. Or what does a believer have in common with an unbeliever? What agreement is there between the temple of God and idols? For we, he says, are the temple of the living God. And we shouldn't have anything to do with idols. Agreement, by definition, is harmony of opinion or action. I love that idea of harmony, because we sing harmony. And when, you know, when people are singing a different tune, right, Chris, when somebody's sitting next to you, well, I mean, not literally right now, but if somebody's next to you, oh yeah, okay, when somebody's next to you and they're singing a totally different song, that sounds really weird. You know, if we're singing Blue Skies and Rainbows and they're singing, you know, Rock This World by some crazy, you know, band, then you'd be like, what are you singing? You know, there's no harmony. There's nothing taking place. The same music's not being sung together. Paul is reminding the Corinthians to not walk with the world. Okay? Look at Amos chapter 3, verse 3. He says, do two walk together unless they have agreed to do so? I mean, when we're walking with somebody, we usually are in agreement with them. So we have this idea of agreement, going back, harmony of opinion or action. It also means reaching an agreement as to a common goal. So our goals need to be the same. And if the person that we spend the most time with, or the people that we spend the most time with, their goals are different than ours, then we're being mis-yoked or unequally yoked with those folks. Now, I get that we work with people, and that we spend time with people, and we're supposed to be the salt and be the light and be, you know, huge influence in their lives. But I'm not talking about those kinds of relationships as much as we're talking about the ones that are going to change your world, right? Not to be like God's world, but to be like their world. And that's really important for us to understand. So don't be in agreement with the world. Don't be in harmony with wickedness. Don't find common ground with Satan. Because he says, what harmony is there between Christ and Belial? Some translations use this word concord, right? It's not a word that we necessarily use anymore. The word in the Greek is the word, and I want you to pay attention to this word, symphonesis. Right? That's the Greek word, symphonesis. It tells us it's the word harmony, but if you can tell by the words, right? Symphony. Symphonesis. This is where we get the word symphony from. Now, when a symphony is playing, you have a conductor leading that symphony. And they're all watching them. They're all looking at the same music. And even though you've got all these instruments and all these different things taking place, together they form this incredible, harmonious, beautiful work of art. Right? Working together. Different and yet beautiful at the same time. But the harmony, the symphony, comes from following the director and paying attention to the director's music. No different than paying attention to Scripture and understanding that God is leading our lives. Warren Wiersbe said, the word concord gives us our English word symphony. And it speaks of beautiful music that comes when the players are reading the same score and obeying the same leader. That's pretty powerful. And so Paul is using this word symphonesis to remind us, remind the Corinthians, hey, you're walking in this world, and Corinth was a pretty evil place. If you want to go and study a little bit about some of the ancient cities and what they did and how they did it, Corinth was pretty bad. I mean, it's the Vegas of their day, so to speak. All right. And so can you find cool stuff in Corinth? Can you find good people there? Absolutely. Same for Vegas. There's Christians in Vegas. There's churches in Vegas. And they're not, you know, the preacher doesn't dress like Elvis or anything. I mean, it's some pretty normal places there. We've been to services there on many occasions. But they go back and start talking. When he's talking to these Corinthians, he's reminding them, hey guys, you've got to abstain from some of the things that everybody else is participating in. You've got to separate yourselves. There's not harmony in the life of a Christian and non-believer. I like this idea. It doesn't resonate, right? It doesn't. I was looking at different commentaries, and one said, things of God don't resonate with the things of the world. They don't match pitch. They don't sound the same. The world has a different philosophy, different mindset, different goal, different action when it comes to living life. And there's not very many young people in here, but again, I promise you that if they come to church next week, we'll have this in Bible class. But picking a future mate is a huge choice. I believe with all my heart, this passage is specifically talking to our younger folks when they're making these decisions about who they're going to choose to marry. Right? I mean, it's a big deal because it's a lifetime commitment, and I think it's a huge choice. And I think that the reason it's a huge choice is because Paul and God have spoken to this on many occasions. Don't choose someone who's dancing with the world, right? Waltzing with evil or trying to harmonize with worldly goals or worldly dreams. You'll end up getting your feet stepped on. And the harmonies will be awful. It's no fun singing with somebody and your harmonies are off, right? And you say, hey, let's have a good old hoedown. And you know, you're like, no, maybe we won't do that at our household, right? Not the good sounds. So when we think about what Paul is really saying here, he's saying it's really crucial, guys, for you to choose the folks that you spend your time with. And I think it's extremely important. James says it like this in James chapter 4, verse 4. He says, friendship with the world is enmity against God. Therefore, anyone who chooses to be a friend of the world becomes an enemy of God. That's a huge verse for us to recognize and to deal with on a daily basis. That we've got to be really careful who we become friends with. So going back to the clean, unclean, right? Not being joined in any way. Paul says, what does the temple of God have to do with idols? Right? Now, we sometimes pat ourselves on the back and say, oh, that's easy. I don't have any idols on my mantelpiece. Right? Well, I mean, we have some big trophies for chili and cook-offs and things like that, you know, on our mantelpiece. But they're not idols. Right? We're not bowing down and worshiping and things like that. So we feel a lot better about this word idolatry because we go, we don't involve ourselves in that. But one definition of idolatry is the worshiping of a physical item as a god. And we check that off and go, sweet, don't do that. But the other definition, the secondary, and just basically a step below the primary definition is an immoderate attachment or devotion to someone or something. Now that hits just a little closer to home, because we can find ourselves being very devoted to things or being very devoted to someone. And he's saying in this passage, hey, don't allow that devotion to be with an unbeliever, one who does not believe in God, because they will push you and pull you in the wrong direction. Idolatry is simply worldliness. And so when we are tempted to act like the world, we're tempted to be in an idolatrous relationship. It's throughout the Old Testament. You see this word adultery, right? And we picture this word adultery and say, oh, that's a sexual crime in a marriage relationship. But the word adultery is literally the breaking of a devoted covenant or a promise. And so we see that with the Israelites on a constant basis, where they chased after the world. They chased after the nations of or the gods of the other nations, and they started to live their life like them. And God says, why are you committing adultery against me? Right? Worshiping after these other idols. So their lives were being influenced, not by God, but they were being influenced by the things around them. And so it's important for us as we walk every single day. What is influencing me? What's changing me? How am I becoming, you know, a different person? Is it in a good way? It's supposed to be, because we're supposed to be being changed daily, but to be more like Jesus and to be more like God. Again, he says, what agreement is there between the temple of God and idols? For we are the temple of the living God. This is God's temple, right? The Holy Spirit chooses to dwell in us. We are the temples of the Holy Spirit. So the one in whom God dwells cannot be in agreement with idols. And I didn't read verse 17. Jackson did. Therefore, come out from them and be separate. Right? So be separate from the world. Be separate from those folks that are influencing you in the wrong way. It's easy to be separate. And it's an enunciation thing, but you know, we talk about, well, I'm separate and apart, but you separate. Right? And when I see the word separate, for me in my mind, I always see the word rate. When I separate something, I rate it. I mean, you ever go through your closet and you separate your clothes? You kind of rate them, don't you? I'm going to keep these. These are my Sunday clothes, or these are my, you know, go to work clothes, or these are my, you know, go to school clothes, and then these are my, I'm going to give these to somebody that needs them because I don't want them anymore. I rate them. I separate them. When I do weddings, just did a wedding. Remember this part? Probably not. Maybe you do. You remember the wedding. Good for you. All right. That's a start. Every wedding that I've ever done, I've quoted Matthew 19:6, right? Therefore, what God has joined together, let no one separate. Right? Because what God puts together, no one is supposed to be able to separate. And here's what's cool. That's a physical man and wife relationship. What God has joined together, let no one separate. But he does that spiritually too. What God has joined together. God is the one that joins his bride, us, the church, the fellowship of believers, with his son, Jesus Christ, the groom. Right? And so what God has joined together, let no man, let no idol, let no worldliness separate. And we just have to rate that which is important to us as the bride of Christ. How important is it? Does it cause division? Does it cause difficulty in my life? If it is, then I need to get rid of it, right? That's the way we look at it. After being married, I love this story, for 44 years, a husband looks at his wife, right? They're both 21. They both get they're both 21 when they get married. Here it is 44 years later, 65 years old. He says, honey, 44 years ago when we were both 21, we had a cheap apartment. We had a cheap car. We slept on a sofa bed. We watched a 10-inch black and white television set. He goes, but I didn't care. Because every night I went to bed with this smoking hot 21-year-old chick. Right? His wife. And he goes, now here we are, 44 years later. We have a $2 million house. We have a $80,000 car. We have a king-size bed. And we have a 70-inch plasma television set. And yet now I'm going to bed with a 65-year-old woman every night. Seems to me like you're not holding up in your part of the bargain. Yeah. Not a very wise guy. But the wife is pretty smart because she says, I'm very reasonable. So I'll tell you this. You go find you a 21-year-old hot smoking chick, and I will guarantee that you will live again in a cheap apartment. You will drive a cheap car. You will live on, you will sleep on a sofa bed, and you can watch TV on a black and white TV. So you just go do your thing, right? And I know it's a joke, but isn't the husband rating? Isn't he looking at this relationship with his wife and rating the things that are the most important and deciding what he needs, right, in that relationship? We all do that. We separate our daily lives and we pick and choose what we feel is the most important thing or the most important person. And rightly so, we should. And so this morning, this is really a lesson about, I mean, according to Paul, right, that we shouldn't lose sight of the things that God has blessed us with. That's another thing I say in weddings, right? Don't take her for granted, right? That's what Joe told me. That's what Joe told me. I said, Joe, tell me the most important thing about, you know, being married for 60 plus years. And of course, jokingly, he said, just learn how to say yes, ma'am. Right? Just learn how to say yes, ma'am. And I said, no, Joe, tell me, I mean, you're being funny, tongue in cheek. And I said, and he said, don't take them for granted. And he said it as well. I mean, everyone talks about that. When we're in a relationship with God, do we not sometimes take that for granted? I think we do. I think we take, you know, living in the United States for granted, living in Oklahoma for granted, you know, having loving people around us for granted. I mean, there's a lot of folks that don't have the things that we have. And we said, so we have a tendency to take it for granted. So this morning, I would love for us to just kind of slow down a second and look at our lives and reflect and say, what are some things in my life that are teaching me to lean more toward the world than they are teaching me to learn to lean toward God? Right? Because God is our strength and God is our rock. So we need to have our lives in harmony with God's will. So we want to make sure, right, that we don't yoke ourselves with a donkey. Right? We just don't want to yoke ourselves with a donkey. It doesn't make sense to yoke ourselves with a donkey because that's unclean. And so if you don't get anything else out of the lesson this morning, then get that part right there. Right? Donkey. You know, that's become kind of funny, but we don't need to yoke ourselves with a donkey. All right? It's important for us to pay attention to what Paul is saying in this passage. And you can finish reading 2 Corinthians, and he goes on and talks about some stronger things. And I know David Skidmore's coming to teach Wednesday night, chapter 7. Some really good stuff in chapter 7. It is a reminder. And so this morning, I just wanted to be a reminder to us as well that we need to pick the folks that we spend our time with wisely, all right? And be influencers, but making sure that we're not being influenced to be more like the world. That includes our Facebook posts and our Instagrams and all of our things that we do. We want to represent Christ well. And it shows the world. It shows the world who we belong to. If you're struggling with something this morning, I know Jim's got an invitation song. If there's anything we can help with this morning, please come while we stand, while we sing.